Hey, what's going on, my qualifiers? Welcome to another episode of Unqualified News with your host, M. Mauricio. That's me. And hope you guys are having a good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good day, good week, good month. I really hope so, because there's a lot of people in the world right now that are not having a good day, good week, good month, okay? And searching through the news this time around to try to find something was not hard. This time around, it was very, very easy because there's so much shit going on. So much turmoil. That's why I named this episode World Under Turmoil. There's stuff going on in North Korea. I mean, there's been stuff going on in North Korea. But right now, I think there's going to be a lot of light shed on North Korea. Because there's a lot of pressure on China on what's happening in North Korea. With them killing their people. Well, I'll bring you guys a story here from Al Arabiya Network. And that's a news site in the Middle East. And they're talking about North Korea helping Iran build a 45-kilometer tunnel from place to place so they can move fucking weapons and attack people stealthily. I mean, that's on this article, okay? It's insane. It's there. North Korea has specialists that build underground tunnels. Who would have known, right? Who would have fucking known? Then I have another story here from routers.com talking about Myanmar's coup. Now, 1,000 people, innocent people, have died since February 1st when the military took over Myanmar. I have also aljazeera.com right here. Mexico is suing the U.S., well, the U.S. gun makers. So they're suing U.S. gun makers, a couple. You know, Beretta, Glock, Colt, Smith & Wesson. Because they're saying that about 70 to 90% of Mexican citizens are killed by U.S. manufactured weapons. You got to listen to that one. There's a lot there. I had a lot of comments on that one there. You'll see what I mean. Alrighty, my qualifiers. Thanks. Appreciate you guys catching another episode. Talk to you guys in a bit. North Korea. Iran supported in building Hezbollah's 45-kilometer tunnel. This one comes from alarabiyanews.net. And this is a news outlet from the Middle East. I love reading these because they bring a different light to a lot of these world events than America does. Hezbollah has built a 45-kilometer underground tunnel linking Lebanon south with inland Bekaa Valley under a $13 million deal with a North Korean company specializing in the development of underground infrastructures and with the supervision of an Iranian Revolutionary Guards Corps officer, according to a report released by Alma Research Center. The report revealed that Hezbollah has constructed a 45-kilometer tunnel linking the area east to the coastal city of Saida with the southern mountainous regions of Jenisse and Rinhan, and the inland Bekaa Valley. The 45-kilometer tunnel links the villages of Jensnaya, Wadi El Leymun, Sanya, Zalta, Al Romane, Jabal Tora, Lawiza, Zejud, Al Zangrin, Aichiechi, Al Kotrani, Al Sisiri, Meiduing, and Machagara. The land of tunnels was built with the assistance of a North Korean company specializing in the development of underground infrastructures called the Korea Mining Development Trading Corporation, also known as KOMID, K-O-M-I-D. The report added that the actual construction was carried out by Hezbollah's Jihad Construction Foundation, which is in fact a branch of the Iranian Jihad Construction, which was founded in 1988. The Jihad Construction Foundation used civilian companies to serve as cover for the construction of the land of tunnels. One of the companies suspected of involvement in the construction and civilian cover-up is the Bekaa Building and Contracting Company, formerly known as the Iranian Authority for the Reconstruction of Lebanon, the report added. The report also revealed that the tunnels allow the maneuvering of forces from place to place for the purpose of reinforcing, defense positions, or for carrying out an attack in a safe, protected, and invisible manner. In our assessment, motorcycles, ATVs, and other small vehicles can also be transported through some of the tunnels. In 2004, a Japanese journalist named Takashi Arimoto reported on a meeting between Syrian President Bashar al-Assad and senior North Korean officials, during which he sought North Korean assistance for Hezbollah's in the planning and construction of underground military installations, bunkers, and tunnels. According to additional information that the research has found, the North Korean company COMID signed a $13 million deal with Hezbollah for the supply of the engineering materials for excavating tunnels and, in addition, for the transfer of North Korean engineering technology to Hezbollah's Jihad Construction Foundation. And there you have it, my qualifiers. That's from Al Arabiya Network. That is local news from the Middle East. And what did you guys get out of that? Iran and North Korea, they're definitely working together. That's not a, you know, a secret. We all know that they're working together. Thinking about these tunnels, really, like, what I think about is, look, I don't know if you guys knew this, but if you search this up, you'll see it and you'll find it. Just search up North Korea crystal meth. Okay, I know it sounds like, where are you going with this? North Korea is like one of the top manufacturers of crystal meth. So these tunnels, North Korea, crystal meth, the first thing that comes to mind is the tunnel that El Chapo escaped from. You know what I'm saying? All those tunnels, the tunnels that the Sinaloa cartel has been using to smuggle shit in and out of the United States. But then another thing that I also think about is North Korea can barely feed their people. North Korea barely has lights. They have no electricity in most of their places. But yet they have specialists in developing infrastructure underground. That's hard to believe. That's hard for me to believe. You know, I know, I understand they're doing nuclear warfare and all that, right? They're putting rockets up in the air. I just think that that's all a bunch of shit too. I don't believe that for 100. Yeah, I don't think North Korea, with the way their shit is running, where they cannot feed their people, they do not have electricity, nobody wants to trade with them anymore. Russia's not helping them anymore. So now it's just China and some selected few other countries like Iran. I don't think, I don't know about this right here. This shows me, like, this is from the Middle East too. So what they're trying to show here is, hey, look, North Korea is someone to you know, that you would have to deal with, which maybe I'm just biased because I'm, you know, USA go all the way. But I don't think that they're a threat, North Korea is. But what they are a threat is to their own people. Right now, there's a giant, giant genocide happening in North Korea. But there's no way the United States is going to interfere because they're backed by China. Come on, man. Come on. NBA, we just had fucking half of the NBA squad say, hey, sorry China, please buy our jerseys. We don't care about anything that's happening. We don't care about you taking over Hong Kong. Don't worry about it. It's all good. That just happened. That happened. This is real. It happened. We just kind of say, hey, we'll look the other way. John Cena, right? He was in a movie. I think it was one of the Fast and Furious movies. They were not going to show it in China, which was going to lose them millions. So then I saw this video of John Cena in full Mandarin apologizing to China. Look it up. John Cena, Mandarin apology. Just look that up. It's crazy to see John Cena talk Mandarin perfectly, you know? Yeah, this was about North Korea. And there's no way we're going to go into North Korea while China still backs them. That's going to be a fucking crazy war if we ever do that. And I wanted to bring North Korea up because Joe Rogan had on his podcast somebody that escaped from North Korea. Her name is Yeomni Park. She's a North Korean lady that escaped. And you just got to listen to it. Just look it up. Just look up Joe Rogan, North Korean interview. And it should come right up because it's an insane interview. Gives you a full scope of really what's happening in North Korea. And it was a tough interview to listen to, which is why I wanted to bring up a North Korean story, because I wanted to bring some light. I mean, with however I can, whoever hears this, I mean, I honestly, I feel like there's nothing I can do as me, as a person that's here working 45 hours a week and is barely, you know, making it out there. That's how I feel. I feel like there's nothing I can do, but I'm doing something. I'm doing this to tell you, the person that's listening to this, maybe you can do something, or maybe you can do something so minimal like what I'm doing here. And then maybe another person can do it, and then another. And then there's a lot of us just yapping about North Korea, right? Another thing that I'm sorry, but I can't help to think about is when I was in history class and the Holocaust came up, we would always look at each other like, how come the U.S. didn't go in? How come the U.S. didn't go in 1935 to Germany right before they started fucking up all the Jewish people? How come? How come we didn't go? I don't know. I'm asking you. I don't know why. But I guarantee you it has something to do with our ties. And I guarantee you it has something to do with fucking money. And that's what's going on right now here with North Korea and China. Death toll since Myanmar coup tops 1,000, says activist group. This one comes from Reuters.com by the Reuters team. The death toll as a result of Myanmar's February 1st coup topped 1,000 on Wednesday, according to an official of the Assistance Association of Political Prisoners, AAPP, activist group, which has been recording killings by the security forces. A spokesman for the ruling junta did not respond to a call to request comment. The military authorities have previously said the AAPP figures widely cited by the international organizations are exaggerated. The army has also said scores of members of the security forces have been killed. The AAPP does not include them in this count. According to AAPP records, 1,001 innocent people have been killed, AAPP Secretary Tate Nang told Reuters. The actual number of victims is much higher. The Southeast Asian country has sunk into chaos since the coup, with protests continuing daily, insurgencies flaring in the border regions, and widespread strikes that have severely damaged the economy. The army overthrew elected leader Aung San Suu Kyi, alleging irregularities in an election swept by her National League of Democracy Party in November 2020. The then Electoral Commission and international monitors said the army accusations were wrong. The military authorities say their seizure of power should not be called a coup because it was in line with the constitution. That's a quick update on Myanmar, what's going on over there with Aung San Suu Kyi from Reuters, my qualifiers. Man, yeah, 1,000 people killed, innocent people. And what's going on there is an extreme of what could have happened here in the United States. This is basically left versus right type of situation. You know, like let's say, hypothetically speaking, like if Trump had an army that was backing him and that army said, hey, we don't believe that, you know, that he lost. And this is why. They could have taken over the country the same way that the army took over Myanmar. I don't know the gun laws in Myanmar either, but I guarantee you residents can't get a gun as easy as they can get a gun in Texas. That's another reason why I'm sure they were able to basically take over a country. And I'm going to keep bringing up Myanmar because I feel like there's something going on there that I still don't quite understand why we're turning a blind eye to that country. Mexico sues U.S. gun makers, but will it make a dent in trafficking? This one is from AlJazeera.com by Anne Deslandes from Mexico City, Mexico. 3 years ago, Crescencio Chencho Pacheco became one of the estimated 357,000 people in Mexico forcibly displaced from their homes due to conflict and violence. Pacheco became a spokesperson for himself and 1,600 of his neighbors who fled their villages in the mountains of Guerrero State when a local group armed with hand grenades and firearms took over the territory for drug trafficking and other illegal activities. Based on bullets found at the scene, some of the weapons wielded by the gang are believed to have been smuggled into Mexico from the United States. The vast majority of people displaced from Guerrero in November 2018 have never returned to their villages. Some are scattered throughout Mexico, while many, like Pacheco, are now seeking asylum in the U.S. due to the continuing threat posed by the gang that still occupies the area. His story is just one example of how lax gun laws north of the border are fueling violence in Mexico, which heavily restricts the sale and ownership of firearms. It has destabilized the country, Pacheco told Al Jazeera of the guns that have poured into Mexico. He is currently living in temporary accommodations in the U.S. while he awaits for a decision on his asylum case. Earlier this month, to help curtail the flow of illegal weapons, the Mexican government took the unprecedented step of filing a lawsuit against U.S.-based gun manufacturers and distributors, alleging that their negligence has led to illegal arms trafficking into Mexico and fueled violence and bloodshed. Yet, while the suit sends a powerful message, some contend it is unlikely to curtail the flow of illicit arms into Mexico. The lawsuit, which was filed in the U.S. Federal District Court in Massachusetts and is seeking a $10 billion in damages, takes aim at marquee brands in the U.S. firearms business, including Smith & Wesson Brands, Beretta Firearms Manufacturing, Beretta USA, Beretta Holding, Century International Arms, Colt's Manufacturing Company, Glock Inc., Glock GES MBH, Sturm, Ruger & Company, and gun supplier Whitmer Public Safety Group, which does business as Interstate Arms. The complaint contends that 70 to 90% of the guns recovered from crime scenes in Mexico were trafficked from the U.S., and that the majority of them were made by six U.S. manufacturers, Smith & Wesson, Beretta, Century Arms, Colts, Glock, and Ruger. The complaint also highlights that Mexico has one gun store in the entire nation and issues fewer than 50 gun permits per year, and claims that a gun manufactured in the U.S. is more likely to be used to murder a Mexican citizen, 17,000 in 2019, than an American citizen, 14,000 in 2019. A report by the U.S. Government Accountability Office released in February examining Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms and Explosives, ATF, data found that 70% of firearms reported to have been recovered in Mexico from 2014 through 2018 and submitted for tracing were from the U.S. These guns are legally purchased in gun shops or shows mainly by U.S. citizens and or legal residents, Alan Samayoa, an analyst with global risk consultancy Control Risks, told Al Jazeera. Once acquired, either by gun traffickers or single individuals, guns are sold to the criminal groups intending to cross them into Mexico. Samayoa said the easiest and cheapest way to transport guns from the U.S. to Mexico is through illicit crossing points along the border, indeed, in the opposite direction of drug smuggling routes. Guns are also smuggled through legal international crossings, noted Samayoa. This usually occurs in collusion with custom officials. Arms also get across the border in pieces, with different people crossing with individual specific parts. And once all the smugglers and parts are in Mexico, they reassemble the guns, he said. Because the figures in February report only represent the firearms submitted to the ATF by the Office of Mexico's Federal Attorney General, the actual number is likely higher. For its part, Mexico's government estimates that more than 2 million weapons have been illegally smuggled into the country from the U.S. over the past decade. They have helped fuel a rising gun homicide rate, which reached 13 homicides per 100,000 people in 2020, according to Mexico's National Institute of Statistics and Geography. Mexico's lawsuit against U.S. gun manufacturers follows other grand gestures by the administration of President Andrés Manuel López Obrador, also known as AMLO, to push back on its northern neighbor and signal a departure from the corruption and violence of its predecessors. Indeed, from threatening to kick out the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration to accusing the U.S. government of coup-mongering, grand gestures of Mexican sovereignty have become a hallmark of the AMLO administration. The López Obrador administration seeks to refocus bilateral security cooperation and reducing arms trafficking from the U.S., among other issues, Stephanie Brewer, Director for Mexico and Migrant Rights with the Washington Office of Latin America, a U.S.-based think tank, told Al Jazeera. The lawsuit comes in this context and sends a strong message on the importance that Mexico's federal government attaches to this, she added. As Brewer observed, this isn't the first time that Mexico has signaled its interest in prioritizing arms trafficking, but the current administration took this message to a new level. Mexico's lawsuit could face a number of hurdles, chiefly the U.S.'s Protection of Lawful Commerce in Arms Act, which shields gun manufacturers from nearly all civil liability and blocks victims and their families from suing them. U.S. legislation makes it very difficult to sue gun manufacturers for the violence inflicted with their weapons. So the lawsuit faces a tough path ahead, Brewer said. One of the gun manufacturers Mexico is suing, Glock Incorporated, has labeled the lawsuit baseless and promised to vigorously defend itself. Samayoa said even if the ruling favors the Mexican government, it won't be enough to have a tangible impact on gun trafficking volume. Rather than reducing gun violence, a potential successful lawsuit is likely to be reflected in a change in the ways criminals get access to guns. Rather than reducing gun violence, a potential successful lawsuit is likely to be reflected in a change in the way criminals get access to guns, Samayoa said. For example, criminals can become more involved in in-house gun production or look for other markets outside of the U.S. to get their gun supply. Likewise, the theft of guns from security forces in Mexico can also increase, he noted. Still, Brewer said, the lawsuit sends a strong message to the U.S. on the importance of this issue to the Mexican government, even if it does not succeed in court. But, she added, it will also take reforms on the Mexican side to fully address the issue of gun violence in the country. Overall, the only real solution to Mexico's criminal violence is through investigation and prosecution of criminal networks to reduce impunity and disrupt collusion and tolerance by state actors, Brewer said, noting it is also necessary to have professionalization and accountability for Mexico's police forces at all levels. And that's from aljazeera.com, my qualifiers. That's an extensive story on Mexico, and I went purposely looking for a Mexican story because I wanted to bring you guys, I just wanted to talk about Mexico because I just went to Mexico last week, and you know, I'm on Qualified News all the time. So I was over there talking about the Mexican government with somebody. He was a DJ. His wife was like a realtor. And this guy, Obrador. So last week, 2 weeks ago, they were trying to do a referendum. And I, you know, nobody knows what that means, right? But what they were trying to do is basically sue or like create a lawsuit to bring back all the old presidents, like six guys in the past that were presidents from Mexico, and they're trying to pin corruption on them, right? And so there was a giant vote to all Mexicans. Hey, come out and vote. You know, if you guys want us to bring these other presidents that are gone, to bring them back, and like, not to bring them back, to sue them, basically, to hold them accountable for the corruption that they did to the Mexican country. I think It was a silly percentage of people went out to vote. Like a silly percentage. I think it was less than 10% of people went out to vote for this. So I wanted to bring up a story from Mexico. And as I was looking for a Mexican story that had to do with the referendum, this came up. And this is a more recent story. Already, they're not gonna pay up. We're not, you know, all our gun manufacturers are not about to give $20 billion to Mexico. Because once we do that, then they're going to open the floodgates to all these shootings that have been going on with the Smith & Wesson guns or whatever the AR-15 gun is. You know what I'm saying? All those families have sued, and they have not won. If we give $20 billion to Mexico and say, hey, you know what? You're right. Most of our guns are killing your Mexican citizens. That's never going to happen, okay? Because then they're going to have to go back and start giving out money to everybody that's been killed by a gun. It's not a gun that kills the person, right? It's a person that's holding the gun that kills the person. I mean, that's so silly. Come on. We all know this, but we forget, or we just don't want to touch that because it's hard to crack that. You know, it's hard to find a loophole in that, you know? The last thing about this gun violence thing, man. Like, think about what's going on in Hong Kong where nobody has weapons. So China just decided, hey, you know what? After 50 years, we're gonna come back and take back Hong Kong. And what did they do? They started throwing rocks and bottles and shit like that. And what the Chinese government started doing? They started shooting with bullets. So you gotta really think about it. If these Hong Kong people would have access to weapons just like Texans do, you think China would have gone in there like, hey, we're here to take over? Never, 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 never would have done that, because that would have caused so many casualties. And whatever, man, put me on whatever, you know, side you want to put me on. But remember, I'm down the middle. This is just an obvious thing that you got to look at. Even though you don't agree, you got to look at it. China sifts opportunity from ashes of U.S.-Afghan project. This one comes from BangkokPost.com, written by AFP. Reporting from Beijing, China's overtures to the Taliban indicate a bid to extract maximum benefit from the dramatic collapse of the U.S. project in Afghanistan. But Beijing will remain watchful of the hardliners now running the show in Kabul, especially as Afghanistan borders China's eastern Xinjiang province, home to the Muslim-majority Uyghurs, analysts say. Around a fortnight before the Islamists seized power in a lightning offensive that stunned the world, Foreign Minister Wang Yi hosted a Taliban delegation in Beijing. And just one day after the Taliban entered Kabul, China said it was ready to deepen friendly and cooperative relations with Afghanistan. While Beijing says it also has no desire to direct any future political settlement in Kabul, it appears to have scented opportunity to press its belt and road interest as the U.S. pulls out. As power transitions to the Taliban, Beijing has a few key demands, said Hua Po, an independent political analyst in Beijing. The first is to protect China's investments and ensure security of Chinese nationals, he says. Second, it is necessary to cut off relations with the East Turkestan, Xinjiang, separatists, and not let them return to Xinjiang. But pragmatism appears to be prevailing over the ideology towards a group whose religious doctrines have in the past left China queasy. And the Taliban appear to have understood that if they want good relations with China, they will have to leave China's Muslims, whose plight is rallying cause for Islamists worldwide, alone. A Taliban spokesman, Mohammed Naeem, has vowed that Afghanistan's soil would not be used against any country's security. In China, state media has buffed up the potential of driving major economic schemes under the new regime. From the Anyak Copper Mine Project, Afghanistan's largest copper deposit and the world's second largest, to the north oil fields of Fravyap and Saryupul. Beijing-backed firms have already pumped hundreds of millions of dollars into rights to the mine and build, but extreme insecurity has iced most of the plans. Meanwhile, Afghanistan's generous lithium deposits, the country has dubbed the Saudi Arabia of lithium, have manufacturers of electric vehicles which run on the mineral licking their lips. And China is the world's largest EV maker. The Taliban, who stand to benefit hugely from building ties with Beijing, look forward to China's participation in the reconstruction and development of Afghanistan. Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Hua Chunying told reporters on Monday. We welcome this, she said. China's embassy in Kabul remains operational, although Beijing began evacuating Chinese citizens from the country months ago as security deteriorated. Afghanistan has for centuries been a cauldron of big power aspirations in Central Asia, many of which have eventually run aground. While the Taliban are trying to rebrand as a more moderate force than their first brutal hardline incarnation, they remain an unpredictable entity leading to a volatile country. China knows this history, and they know that this is a government that they are not going to entirely trust, said Raffaello Pantucci, a senior fellow at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies in Singapore, who specializes in Afghanistan. And that makes a hasty investment drive unlikely, he said. Why is it suddenly a more attractive prospect now, when you have a less stable situation with government that is not immensely reliable? I don't foresee Chinese companies saying, let's go and mine some lithium, especially in some parts of the country that are still dangerous, Bantucci added. But where China is reaping the benefits already is on the propaganda front, with Beijing openly wringing maximum propaganda value from America's spectacular foreign policy failure in Afghanistan. Its state media pumped out the images of desperate Afghans flooding Kabul airport in an effort to flee on Monday as a sign of the chaos prompted by the U.S. retreat. On Tuesday, Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Hua said Washington had left an awful mess of unrest, division, and broken families in Afghanistan. America's strength and role is destruction, not construction. State media has peddled the idea that Americans' rush from Afghanistan reflects its fair-weather attitude to all allies, including in Taiwan, which seeks strength from Washington's security guarantee as it defies Beijing. U.S. President Joe Biden hammered over the disorderly retreat, has defended the withdrawal, saying China and Russia would love nothing more than his country to have continued to sink resources into the Afghanistan quagmire. But once the moment for quick point scoring passes, China will take a much colder, pragmatic view of Afghanistan under the Taliban, analyst Hua said. That's from BangkokPost.com, my qualifiers, and it's a quick story on what is happening in Afghanistan. Wow. So the Taliban. You remember the Taliban? I know when Obama was in office, we were all crazy about ISIS. I don't know enough about it. I know I keep saying that in this episode. But from the 80s or 70s, the Mujahideen, they were controlled by Osama bin Laden. The Taliban came next. Then ISIS was around there, right? All these, to me, an unqualified human person like you, to me it sounds like it's all one and the same. Okay, they keep rebranding it just the same way AT&T was Pacific Bell, AT&T Singular, and I'm sure there's some other fucking ones too. They keep rebranding the fucking thing, man. It's the same fucking terrorist group, or maybe not. Hear me out. When I was in high school, we were all about fuck Bush, he's taking us to war, fuck the Taliban too, but fuck the war, right? Because that's all I was being fed as a kid, was Taliban bad, Taliban terrorist, Osama bin Laden terrorist. But there was a point in time with the US, we're cool with Osama bin Laden, we're giving him weapons so he can help us out, do some shit, you know, that we couldn't do. Y'all must have forgot. So now, China's gonna say, nah, we're going in now. This is going to be weird. This is going to be very weird if China starts. If China becomes the U.S. in Afghanistan. You know what I'm saying here? You see what I'm saying here? We were the foreigners in Afghanistan, like, you know, like trying to help them out. We didn't understand their language. Now the same way, there's a possibility where there could be Chinese troops in Afghanistan doing the same thing American troops were doing. Don't know the language. Don't know the culture. We're here to help you. Or not. I don't know. It seems like maybe China will not take that approach and maybe just kind of really like poach that lithium. You heard that lithium, right? You need lithium for batteries, people. What's happening in California? 2035, everything's gonna be electrical. That lithium is gonna be gold. I don't know. I need to bring up another story on Afghanistan. I need to learn more about what's happening. Because I know it's not a clear cut. I know it's not as easy as, hey, as soon as the US left, Taliban took over. Fuck no, that's a lie. There's no way that's true. There's no way that as soon as we dipped, that we didn't know the Taliban was gonna take over. You know what I'm saying? Like, come on, man. We fucking know. We know fucking everything. Thank you so much, my qualifiers. Just a quick second I wanted to take at the end of the episode, like I usually always try to do, to thank you. Thank you for listening. Because this is why I do it. It's for your ears and for mine too. You know, in the future, I would want my son to listen to these things and just be like, what, dad, you're such a crazy person, you know. You know, I wish in the past, I wish 10 years ago I was doing this so I can see what I was thinking then, you know. I mean, I kind of remember, but recording it, hearing it, really gives you a different perspective on any subject. So you guys are helping me so much, okay? Thank you. I really appreciate every listen I get. Every time you share it, You know, even if it is just for like, hey man, look at this guy I know. Look what he's doing, man. Look, you can hear shit in the background. You could do this. You know, it's okay. It's okay. It's fine. However you want to share. You want to share it to... Look at that. That's my timer right there. It's done and over. My lunch is over. Like I've said in the past, I do record my episodes in my car. On my lunches, on my breaks. I record little snippets here and there. I wouldn't have it any other way. I really enjoy doing this. So, I mean, I eat lunch real quick and then I record these episodes. So don't think I'm not eating. I'm eating, okay? My qualifiers. Again, appreciate you guys. Love you guys so much. And enough rambling. Thank you. Have a good week.